Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. The report is just out. It's a report by 91 scientists from more than 40 countries who examined 6,000 scientific studies and wrote a 700-page report chock full of details. They are the scientists that comprise the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is convened by the United Nations. And what they say is scary. They say we have about 12 years until we have climate catastrophe. And at a time when we're in yet another hurricane with yet more devastation than hurricanes normally have, they say that the hurricane in Florida is about 4 to 6 degrees warmer than usual and causing much more havoc than usual. At this time, so soon after Florence, it's time to ask, are we doing enough about climate change? You know, I think the answer is no, but I have a guest today who can give us all the details. His name is Bob Dean. He is the Director of Strategic Engagement for the National Resource Defense Council. Mr. Dean, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Oh, it's Deans, excuse me. Mr. Deans, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be with you.
So let's talk about this report. Ever since Al Gore and Inconvenient Truth, we've certainly known that climate change was a problem, and it certainly has been getting more severe. We've seen the Arctic ice melting. But this report suggests it's even more catastrophic. It's even more likely to come sooner than we feared.
Absolutely, Mark. And I wanted to just open, if I could, by saying that you mentioned Hurricane Michael earlier, and I just wanted to start your show by saying that our thoughts and prayers are with the people of Georgia, the Carolinas, and certainly that Florida panhandle as they're struggling with the worst hurricane to hit that region in decades and in many ways ever. And so it's been a tragic situation. We're thinking about those people and what they're going through. This is exactly the kind of extreme weather event that the report warns us we're going to be seeing more and more of. And as you said, Mark, these are scientists from around the world. This report, which was authored by the United Nations body, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, more than 100 nearly 100 scientists around the world authored the report. Mark, they drew from more than 6,000 scientific studies around the world. So what you have here is essentially the collective genius of our generation sounding a call to action. And generations to come will know who we are by the way we respond to this.
Now, the report says that by 2040, we can expect an increase in temperature worldwide of about 1.5 degrees Celsius, almost 3 degrees Fahrenheit. What does that do? Well, 3 degrees, we don't really notice whether it's, 75 or 78 degrees outside that much. What actually does that mean? Why is 3 degrees catastrophic?
It's huge, Mark, and the reason it's so important is that the Earth is a big energy machine, and 90% of the heat that's being absorbed from global warming, 90% of that's going into our oceans, into our deep water, where we don't even actually see it or feel it. So if you're getting an increase of 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, that is a global average temperature, land and sea. That is actually an indication that we've changed our climate. How? We have increased the amount of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere, Mark, 45%. A 45% increase in carbon dioxide mostly over the past century with the accelerating use of fossil fuels. We're talking about burning coal, gas, and oil. And when we burn these fuels, we put more of this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's like throwing a blanket over our Earth. And if you imagine yourself on a warm night lying in bed with a sheet, and suddenly somebody puts adds 45% to that blanket, you're going to be hot. That's what we've done to the Earth's atmosphere. And we're seeing the impacts all around us, Mark, of this kind of an increase. We're seeing oceans rising. We've been rising at about 1 inch every 8 years. That rate is accelerating. In some places, we're seeing it much faster than that. Virginia, for example, the coast of Virginia is about 40% more than that, some of the fastest sea level rise in the world. In Louisiana, an inch every 3 years.
And if we don't stop, if we continue, and of course we'll get to the fact that the president wants to burn more coal and mm-hmm. why coal is particularly dangerous, but what would you expect, what do scientists say that the sea level rise will be by 2040, which by the way, folks, it's just 22 years away. It's really not that long away.
Not that far away at all, Mark. And the projections we've seen are that it could be anywhere from 3 to 8 feet in increase by 2100. And so by 2040, we're somewhere in that range. But just to give you an idea, 3 feet of flooding in that Norfolk, Virginia beach region would swamp hundreds of roads, thousands of homes, and the largest U.S. naval base in the world. It would flood most of the site of the first permanent English settlement in America at Georgetown. And so that's the kind of thing we're talking about. 3 feet of sea level rise, Mark, and the Everglades are underwater.
And, of course, there are people with beachfront homes. What does this do? I mean, in addition to the flooding, what does it do for, say, food production or species around the globe?
Well, we are losing species right now, Mark, at a faster rate than at any other time since the dinosaurs disappeared 60 million years ago. We are going through what people are calling the sixth extinction. Now, some of this is from what you were your program earlier was talking about, the destruction of natural resources, but a lot of it is related to climate change. And one of the things that this report shows us is the large and growing percentage of species, plants, insects, animals, that are losing the range of their habitat because of these of the temperature changes we're seeing worldwide. And one of the most important things that we're losing, Mark, are our tropical coral reefs. The Great Barrier Reef off the coast of Australia is dying, and that is because it only takes a slight increase in ocean temperatures to bleach and kill these coral reefs. What the report from the IPCC tells us this week is that if we get a temperature increase of 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, we're going to lose 70% of the world's coral reefs. If we go to 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, an average global temperature increase, we're going to lose all the tropical coral reefs in the ocean. That part of the ocean will be dead.
And obviously, for those who like natural beauty, that's something to see. But how do coral reefs affect us? How do they affect anything, medicine or what we do or the air we breathe, anything?
Coral reefs are one of the four or five sort of foundational elements of the natural systems that support life on Earth. They are called the rainforest of the sea, Mark, because they support the animals that are sort of base food chain marine life. You take away those coral reefs, you're taking away, in essence, the rainforest of the sea, the harbingers, the areas that support diverse marine life.
So the plankton eat from the coral reefs, and then the fish eat the plankton, and then the fish eat the other fish, and soon all our oceans could be harmed? I mean, how does it work?
Right. It's a foundational food chain piece. It also provides coral reefs provide shelter from storms for islands and ocean surge. They provide all kinds of important things. You take away those coral reefs, you're taking away the beating heart of the ocean.
Okay, and of course, there's also islands. There's even island nations like Vanuatu that and Palau that are made of coral that would cease to exist. The whole country would cease to exist. The people would have to leave and move somewhere else. We got to take a break, Bob. But when we come back, I want to get into policy and what sure. can be done, if anything, to stop this. And also talk about how some of the effects of climate change are actually magnifying upon themselves. That when you melt the Arctic ice, methane's released that make things even worse. Sorry for a grim show today, folks, but we have to face up to this truth. It's Mark Levine. Call in if you like at 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about this massive report, this 700-page report drawing on 6,000 studies by more than 90 of the world's leading climate scientists that say that we are going to reach catastrophe in as early as 12 years, actually, by 2030, I should say, when the planet could warm up to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's, by the way, tracks the a survey, 500-page impact statement by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that says the planet could warm 7 degrees by the end of the century, by 2100. Just to give you an idea of how these things track, from pre-industrial level, it has said that this is a level that really we haven't seen. We haven't measured anywhere close to in measuring history. It's the kind of thing that could put Manhattan and Miami underwater. My guest is Bob Deans. He is the Director of Strategic Engagement for the National Resource Defense Council, the author of many books on climate change and really our addiction to oil. And Bob, our president says this is all a hoax. He once called it a Chinese hoax. He admitted he hadn't actually read the report. And he's trying to actually make it easier to burn more coal. What is it about fossil fuels that so contributes to global warming?
Well, when you burn coal, gas, or oil, or wood for that matter, but coal, gas, and oil are the huge, that's 81% of the global energy comes from coal, gas, and oil. When you burn these, you produce carbon dioxide. And that goes up into the air. Now, when you and I breathe in and out, we produce carbon dioxide, but it's a much lower level than at a power plant or a cement factory or, for that matter, our cars and trucks. And so what we've done is we're taking these fossil fuels that are called that because they were 20 to 60 million years in the making, and we've taken this concentrated energy and dumped the pollution into our atmosphere, which creates a greenhouse effect. It basically turns our atmosphere into a more intense and dense greenhouse than it already is, and it traps heat in our atmosphere and drives up the temperatures.
Now, which is the most dangerous? I mean, we are in cars. Some people talk about, you mentioned carbon dioxide that we breathe out. Some people mention methane from cows and livestock. Which causes, the most carbon dioxide, the most damage, the quickest? Is it coal? Is that the most dangerous?
You could say that because coal is a very intense concentrated piece of energy, but it's just really what the total comes to in terms of our CO2 emissions. If you burn gasoline, for example, gallon of gasoline produces 20 pounds of CO2 emissions. That's an awful lot. And, you know, if you're driving your car 20 miles for that gallon, that's about a pound per mile. If you can drive a car that gets you 40 miles per gallon, that's a half a pound per mile. That's a big improvement, Mark. And if we can move toward cleaner, more efficient cars, which we're doing, and right here in this country, making some of the best all-electric and hybrid cars anywhere in the world, that can really make a difference, Mark.
What does it mean that every single country on the planet, with the exception of the United States, is part of the Paris Accord. Trump famously pulled us out of it. Now, people complained that the Paris Accord really didn't go far enough, that it was kind of a voluntary treaty set up of goals that had no bite. I mean, many people felt it didn't go far enough, but we have taken ourselves out of it. How does that impact overall climate change?
Well, it's a horrible message to send to the rest of the world, Mark. It puts us out of step with science, out of step with the economic play of our lifetime. Some $8.4 trillion is going to be invested in clean energy technologies around the world in the coming three decades. We need our workers to be part of that. We need our workers to be winners in that. Pretending like none of this is happening doesn't make sense. Frankly, it's failing the country. And it's not what the American people want, Mark. There was a Quinnipiac University poll in August that found 64% of the American people want our government to do more, not less, to address climate change. And yet, as you say, here is the President of the United States withdrawing U.S. participation from the Paris Climate Accord that links every other country in the world. Mark, we have never had any kind of a global agreement that 195 countries have all put plans on the table to advance. 195 countries, Mark, China, India, Germany, Japan, 195 countries put plans on the table in Paris to curb or cut their carbon emissions by shifting away from dirty fossil fuels and toward cleaner, smarter ways to power our future. That was a triumph of American leadership, because we have been moving forward in this country to do what's best for our people, to cut our carbon pollution. We got the whole world on board. Why on earth we would pull away from that makes no sense whatsoever. It's not leadership. It's a betrayal, frankly, of the public trust and of the duty we have to leave our children a livable world.
Bob, one of the things you mentioned is, in addition to food sources and flooding and hurricanes and damage, that green energy actually brings more jobs. It's not a job killer. It's a job booster. I've been focused on the fact that in the coal industry, jobs are down 80-90%, totally apart from any efforts to stop climate change, mostly because the owners of the coal mines, instead of sending people down into the coal mines, are now just blowing up all that terrible putting arsenic and selenium and heavy metals in our rivers and destroying our beautiful mountains. But the other thing that's destroying is jobs, because it used to take 200 miners to go to get a seam of coal, and now, you know, two set the explosives and one picks it up and a machine does it and you're done. Whereas in green energy, whether it's solar or geothermal or wind energy, we're talking not thousands of jobs, but tens and hundreds of thousands of jobs. I'll tell you what, we're coming up on a hard break. When we come back, I'd love if you'd share with us just the economic impact, the positive economic impact, if you will, of green energy and why it's actually a job booster and not a job killer. I'm going to invite others to join us as well. Just call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We got our expert on the line till about 3:45 p.m. today, so here's your chance to ask a true expert on climate change all the questions you ever had. We'll be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levin.
Bob Dean, the Director of Strategic Engagement for the National Resource Defense Council. We're talking, of course, about climate change. Bob Deans, by the way, is the author of many, many books on climate change, including Reckless, The Political Assault on the American Environment, The River Where America Began, A Journey Along the James, The World We Create, A Message of Hope for a Planet in Peril, Deep Water, The Anatomy of a Disaster, The Fate of the Gulf and How to End Our Oil Addiction, and Clean Energy, Common Sense, An American Call to Action on Global Climate Change. He's been a correspondent for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and other newspapers. He's been a chief Asia correspondent, and he's the former president of the White House Correspondents Association. And now, of course, he's selling, and in all these books, he's been sounding the alarm on climate change. Politically, since you do a lot of politics as well as scientific endeavors, Bob Deans, politically, the argument is from Donald Trump and others, we're going to lose all these coal jobs. What is the net gain in jobs from switching to clean energy?
3.2 million.
That's the net gain.
Mark, wow. we right now today, across this country, there are 3.2 million Americans who get up, suit up, roll up their sleeves, and go to work, helping us to do three things. One, become more efficient so that we are able to do more with less waste. Number two, make some of the best all-electric and hybrid cars anywhere in the world. And number three, get more clean, homegrown American power from the wind and the sun. These are the jobs of the future. They're so important. Now, you mentioned earlier that the coal industry has shed 70% of its workers, going from 170,000 in January 1986 to about 51,000 right now. That has nothing to do with any of the efforts that we're making to try to combat climate change. That has everything to do with market shifts and changes in technology. The fact is there are cleaner, smarter ways to power our future. And the investors are getting behind this because they know that we're going to invest $8.4 trillion, Mark, in clean energy over just the next 30 years. We want our American workers to be winners in that fast-growing global marketplace, and it starts right here at home with good policies that help to promote the fuels and power sources of the future and don't anchor us in these dirty fuels of the past, Mark.
So I did a little math in my head just now. I'll see if I got this right. But with 3.2 million jobs gained and maybe 50,000 jobs lost, we're talking 640 jobs gained for every one lost. You could employ all the coal miners, every one of them, in clean energy, and still have 639 other times that. This is something that politically we can easily counteract. Why is it that the 50,000 coal miners and their families seem to enjoy so much more political sway than the 3.2 million people and their families working in clean energy?
It's a great question, Mark. I wish I knew the answer. Somehow in the sort of, whether you want to call it culture wars or the shift to tribalism that is dominating so much of our politics now, the coal miner has taken on almost mythic proportions. It's almost like the Marlboro Man. And what we have been saying is that every single one of those coal mining jobs counts. They matter. Those jobs are important. They're keeping families alive. But we're talking now about the jobs of the future. And if you look at that Appalachian Plateau, if you look at West Virginia or Southwest Virginia, what we're finding is that people can, the wind turbines that are going up along that eastern plateau of West Virginia are calling for future jobs for wind turbine maintenance folks who are getting good educations, good certification programs in the West Virginia Community College system. Manufacturing efficiency, West Virginia University has one of the top schools in the nation for helping to make our industry more efficient. And if we can continue to invest in these jobs of the future and show a pathway to these skilled workers in West Virginia and elsewhere, we can do much better by them and their families and create a more hopeful future for their children.
Maybe Democrats need to have rallies in wind plants and solar energy plants and just have a massive, massive number of people show up. I would think even in West Virginia, where you have probably more coal jobs than any other place in the United States, even there may well be more people working in, since there's 640 jobs for every one lost, even there, there's probably a lot of green energy. The case really isn't being made, and I guess that's partly the fault of we policymakers, but also the fault of the fact that climate change is, it's hard to pinpoint. I mean, we do talk about in immigration when Donald Trump is separating families and putting children in cages. We can take pictures of that. It's really hard. We can see pictures of the Arctic. We can see pictures of hurricanes, but a picture of coral disappearing, it doesn't have the drama. And I fear that we're actually undergoing a real dramatic horror in the entire world because it lacks some of the drama of well, what you've done as a journalist. What do you think journalists can do better to illustrate the dangers here?
Well, I think some of our publications, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and others, are doing a terrific job of making these connections. For example, after Hurricane Harvey dumped 5 feet of water on the Houston area last summer, marked the record rainfall for the country, it was widely pointed out that the waters of the Gulf of Mexico there were up to 86 degrees. It's like taking, it's like a bathtub, and that when you have that warm water and a storm is lingering over it, it is packing that storm with energy, with heat. And warm air, of course, holds more moisture. And so that's what makes these things so devastating. The same thing drawing the connection with Hurricane Michael. It went from a 90-mile-an-hour hurricane to a 155-mile-per-hour hurricane in less than 33 hours because it was lingering over 84-degree water that was 4 to 5 degrees warmer than normal. Making the connection, Mark, with the wildfires that we've seen, we've burned 7.7 million acres of our country in wildfires this year. That's enough to cover half the state of West Virginia. And when people start looking out their window, looking at their backyard and seeing this kind of devastation, they are connecting the dots. And that's why we actually do have a strong consensus in this country. About 7 in 10 Americans understand this is a problem. 64% want us to do something about it. That sounds like a pretty strong political consensus. But the problem is that here in Washington, the fossil fuel industry has its foot on the throat of the Republican Party. And through campaign contributions and funding ads, political ads in this season, they are doing everything they can to protect the interest of the shareholders. They have that right. They're not breaking any laws. But the rest of us need to stand up, Mark, and say what's good for our children, for our future, for our country, not only for the environment, not only for public health, but for a strong economy going forward.
But part of the problem with a problem of this severity, of this magnitude, is it for a lot of people, and I really, this is almost for any big problem, but it's too big to contemplate, it's too big to figure out what to do anything about, it's too big to focus on, and then after you don't do anything for a while, then it becomes, oh, well, it's too late, we're all going to die anyway. The Arctic ice is melting, the methane is being released from deep in the ice, that causes feedback effects that make it even worse, and maybe we just need to abandon our coasts, give up on coral, and I don't know, I'll live up in Canada. I mean, how do you give hope when this is such an enormous task?
That is the challenge, Mark, and you've put your finger on it. But the good news from the IPCC report that came out this week, that UN report, is that we can still protect our children from the worst of these rising seas, widening deserts, raging wildfires, floods, and storms. But we have to act now. We've got about a decade tops to get this right. There's no time left to squander. There's no time left to pretend it's a hoax invented by the Chinese or any other fairy tales that our politicians are telling us. It's time for us to say, we know what's happening. We know what the science is telling us. We've all been warned, and our children will know we were warned, and they will know who we are by how we respond to that warning.
What's interesting is that you find today that a huge percentage of Republican campaigns are funded just by two brothers, the Koch brothers, and the Koch brothers actually make money from damaging the environment. Am I right there?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, here they are putting all this money into our political system, hundreds of millions of dollars. How is it that they profit from ruining the environment?
Well, they're in the coal and oil business, and it's in their interest to sell as much of this fossil fuel as they possibly can to us. It's in their interest to keep us addicted, in the word of former President George W. Bush, to these fossil fuels. And we know we've had presidents going back to Richard Nixon telling us that we need to reduce our reliance on oil in this country. We know we have to do it. But this industry is the most profitable, most politically connected industry, Mark, in the history of the world, and they are doing everything they can to make us continue our dependency and to prevent us from taking the steps that we know we need to take to phase out the use of fossil fuels. Not overnight, Mark. We didn't get here overnight, but over time. and we need to do it in a deliberate and decisive way.
Bob, we only
That's
have
what they're trying to stop.
About a minute, and I know you've got to go because you got to get to a meeting, but fracking is sort of the new way to get oil to fracture shale rock deep underground. It's caused even more oil. How is fracking, and I know you only got less than a minute, but how is fracking dangerous to the environment?
Well, the important thing there is to try to have responsible public oversight so that we can reduce the risk of what is an inherently dangerous practice. And as we're continuing to get oil and gas from shale through fracking, it's putting more supply out there. It's driving down prices. And, of course, the big picture there is that it's deferring the investments that we know we need to make in efficiency, renewable fuels, and more efficient cars and vehicles.
Bob Deans, I really appreciate you coming here and sharing your wisdom and expertise with us. Thank you for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
That was Bob Deans, the Director of Strategic Engagement for the National Resource Defense Council. You can find out more at nrdc.org. But I encourage you to call in and talk about it. We really don't talk about climate change enough, mostly because it is complex. But when you see a hurricane come, it suddenly becomes very simple. 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Global warming is not some event in the distant future that we have to be worried about. Global warming's already here. Already, the entire globe, the planet Earth, is 1 degree Celsius, which is almost 2 degrees Fahrenheit, warmer than it was in pre-industrial time. And what this fight is about, it may seem small, but it's huge, is we know it's going to go up to at least 1.5 degrees Celsius, but we have to keep it from going to 2 degrees Celsius. As Bob Deans, my guest, pointed out, the difference between 1.5 degrees Celsius and 2 degrees Celsius is the difference between having coral on the planet or not. Coral reefs make up several small islands. Coral reefs are, as he put it, the rainforest of the oceans. That's what the plankton feeds on. The fish feed on the plankton. We may have to give up a lot of different fish. And, of course, they're the bottom of our ecosystem. That means famine all across the globe for people who can't afford to eat. When we can't do crops because of drought and massive heat and population that can't live on the land anymore and then has to move, and then those refugees leave, and then that causes wars, is racism. People don't want refugees. This is a major problem. And the difference, the authors of the accord, of the report point out, between 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius is severe. It's a difference between having an Arctic where there's no ice anymore and having an Arctic that still has ice, 90% of its ice. Water stress, people getting access to water, half the global population, half would be exposed to water, half greater would have water stress at 2 Celsius versus 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's hundreds of millions of people. I'm just reading through here. We would lose 3 million tons of fish, twice the decline as at 1.5 degrees Celsius. As I mentioned, the ice-free summers in the Arctic. It's hard to put a finger on it, but we can already see it. We can already see that hurricanes are stronger. We can already see the Arctic ice is melting. And the question really is, are we just going to keep closing our eyes and denying and denying and denying until it comes to our doorstep? 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. Michael in the Bronx, Old Faithful, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Very intriguing discussion that you had there. And, you know, all this time, you know, the climate change, that's no breaking news here.
No,
and it's
not.
something that Trump should have, especially since he wants to be commander-in-chief, should have been grabbing and pretty much embracing.
Trump's an old man. He'll be dead soon. This is about our
thing.
Children and our grandchildren not having the planet, having more wars, more drought, more famine, more hurricanes. And Trump doesn't give a damn about anybody else except himself.
He's going around. Check this out. He's going around with this campaigning, a vote for this Republicans, a vote for me, as Colin Powell said, that instead of we the people, he's about me the president.
Yeah.
And all this time, here's another intriguing question, and you brought it up earlier. Mr. Trump, have you completed the federal court order and reuniting all those children that you snatched away from? How many of these children are still in inhumane environments?
Well, they actually think that hundreds will never be reunited with their parents. One thing, by the way, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but one thing that I read recently that was very fascinating to me is the expense of destroying families, the expense of brutally removing kids away from their parents and making them, you know, kind of harm for life and making the parents harm for life, that actually, in order to pay for it, they had to take some $250 million out of cancer research. So,
and you know something else?
Republicans had a choice. You could heal people with cancer, save lives, or you could sadistically destroy all those brown people's lives. And apparently Republicans believe that having their loved ones live with longer with cancer was not as important as cruelly destroying forever the lives of immigrants. So, you know, they actually hate more than they love. They hate more than they love.
And I give you something else that would be a good wake-up call, and that is, if you notice, the last couple of hurricanes that hit the U.S., where have they struck? In predominantly red states, as if the old phrase, the Lord works in mysterious ways. Rise and shine, ladies and gentlemen. Time to wake up and smell the coffee.
Yeah, and then, of course, if they occur in Florida or North Carolina, we do spend hundreds of millions, maybe billions of dollars of cleanup, far more than the cost. But for the Koch brothers, hey, you know, they make money, and then we taxpayers spend money. So we taxpayers have to spend a whole much more money, go into debt, while the Koch brothers make money hand over fist. It's a direct transfer of wealth from us to them. Of course, when it comes to Puerto Rico, they just do nothing and let thousands of people die.
And he failed the test on that one.
Well, that's for sure. Thanks for calling, Michael. Always appreciate when you do. Climate change, as I said, it's a difficult one, not because we're wrong. It's kind of an obvious, really, scientific point, like 2 + 2 = 4, but it's politically difficult to explain. You know, one of the things that I've learned as I've gotten into politics is that it's not enough to be right. It's not enough to have your facts straight. It's not enough to know the science. It's not enough to know the truth. You've got to get that across to people. And there are people who believe in lies because they want to believe in lies. And so rationality, science, you know, we have a country now where about a third of this nation hates science, hates intelligence, hates truth, because it goes against their wish to be biased, their wish to be racist or xenophobic or homophobic or misogynistic, to hate women. That's who the Republican Party is right now. And climate change just isn't sexy enough. It's a lot easier to take joy, if you're a sadist, at other people's misery than it is to actually join together with people across the planet to make it better. It's a sad commentary on who we are as a nation. And it's really sad when you think about the fact that the entire world, and there are many, many problems in the world, there are many dictatorships. There's dictatorships worse than the lack of democracy in the United States, to be sure. There's horrible events going all around the globe. But on climate change, that's the one thing that every single country on the globe can agree to, their leaders can agree to. This is a worldwide problem. We're all putting our hands together to solve it, except the United States, the one country on the planet that's not committed to solving the problem. We've got to get rid of these leaders that don't recognize the future. This is Mark Levine signing off.